Hey listeners, this is Dennis Wisco. It is often said that the best sales professional listens more than they talk. And whether you would like to admit this or not, we are all some version of a sales professional. We may be selling a customer a product, selling our boss an idea, or even selling our spouse on a holiday vacation. In order to get better at selling, then we must practice listening. Call tracking is not a new technological advancement, but it does carry many practical purposes. When customers call in to a business, their phone call is logged and recorded. The recording may be used for internal training purposes, for instance, to practice listening to yourself. Or the recording may be used as evidence for a dispute. One area of call tracking that has evolved is the ability to gauge sentiment. Sentiment is not a linear metric. It is not voice plus length of call plus keywords equals sentiment. Rather, you must combine a variety of data points to create a new model that would yield in the ability to measure the sentiment of a caller. Here is another sales adage. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. On today's episode, we feature Anthony Giannacovo, CEO of Call Review, and Steve Lorries, Senior Director of Sales at Call Review. Together, they are pioneering how calls are measured through a new metric of sentiment. As phone calls are tracked and machines are trained to identify how you say it, then businesses can listen better to their customers' needs. And when you use data to optimize the customer journey, then you are also delivering a customer experience. Before we get to today's episode, let's share a listener car buying story. And today's story is a unique one. Tanya from Eugene, Oregon, scoured the entire United States to find the bespoke car of her dreams. What was it? It was an Audi S8, white exterior and Blau brown interior. Blau brown is a dark mahogany color and one that is only available if someone orders it exclusively. And where did she find this car? At an Audi store in Mission Viejo, California. There was no need for Tanya to negotiate on the price. She found the car of her dreams and she was not hesitating to pull the trigger. Except there was one major hurdle to overcome. The Audi S8 carries a six-figure price tag, and the state of California was going to definitely want to collect on their share of sales tax. However, Tanya, living in Eugene, Oregon, is in a sales tax-free state. So, how would she be able to legally avoid paying 8% on a $100,000 vehicle? Her initial idea was to fly down and simply drive the car back to Oregon and register the car immediately with her local DMV. No. That was never going to work. Stay tuned for the end of this episode to hear how Tanya legally avoided paying California sales tax on her dream car. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay, bienvenidos, vitete, willkommen, and welcome to Wisco Weekly. This is the podcast that we're giving you university education on the automotive and mobility space. My name is Dennis Wisco. I'm your host. And alongside with me, as always, my good friend, transportation correspondent, Forbes.com contributor, and sci-fi dystopian writer, and a lover of English muffins, Mr. Rudy Solo.
I don't even know how to respond to that. It was just an egg sandwich. Yes, it was on an egg McMuffin, but it was good. I want to ask you a question. This line that you're including here, this is me putting my lawyer brain on, university level education. What do you say?
University level education. I mean, look, this is podcast. What have you always said about podcasts and education?
I, I have, and I do think that podcasts will disrupt.
It
is disrupting the educational system. But can you just say university-like education? Or just can you add some parameters in there?
As the lawyer,
I'm not your lawyer. By the way, I'm not your lawyer. I'm a lawyer.
Thank God you're not my lawyer, because my lawyer would just say yes to whatever I want.
Oh, then that lawyer would be in jail with you.
Men, women, and children. I am happy to have these next two guests on the show because I think that this is definitely, definitely a very interesting area that can be very innovative when it comes to, let's call it in the realm of customer service. As you know me, I'm a big fan of data science, and the idea of the phone has been around for God knows how long. But of course, recently, as Google Analytics and other types of monitoring and call tracking and analyzation of these data metrics has come about, there can be new ways to look at how customers are interacting with the business by virtue of calling that business. Our two guests today are experts in this industry, and we're going to be eager to learn more about this. Men, women, and children, please welcome to the show the CEO of Call Review, Mr. Anthony Giannacovo. I got to say it in Italian.
I got it.
I swear I thought he was going to say Scaramucci or whatever.
And yes, my dear friends, I am here.
And the Director of Business Development, Mr. Steve Lorries. Thank you for the name, by the way.
You got it.
Thank you for the name.
We have to bring our Irish supporters here.
Well, so we can get familiar with the both of you gentlemen. So, Anthony, let's start with you first, sir. Maybe tell us, and I don't want to say quickly, but a little bit quicker so we can get to know Steve as well. In your eyes, what does the future of automotive retail look like?
I think there's going to be a revolution there. In a way, it's changing already. Carvanas of the world, what we've seen Google testing out there and Apple testing, automated cars and driverless cars and car sharing, it's changing it all. How people buy cars, how people be using cars. I mean, think about it. You probably only use about 10% of your car. 90% of the time it's parked somewhere. Imagine if you start to share that car, and what does that mean for me to have to buy another car if we decide to do a share program? I mean, who would have thought you would share bikes? Who would have thought you would have shared scooters? Who would have thought you would have shared, mopeds? And you go anywhere in Europe and many places around the world nowadays, you can do that. So the entire process is going to change. Now, how quickly it's going to change, that's a guess. And it's a guess for many people. I believe it'll be a lot quicker, only because people are seeing how they bank, how they buy insurance, how they buy food, how they buy almost anything, furniture, clothing, all done in a different manner than it was done many, many years ago. Now, I'm a firm believer that, way back in the 90s when everybody was talking about bricks and mortars, that they were going to go away and everybody was going to bank by the internet. Well, that never really happened. It was an evolution in the process. You have a lot of internet banking, but you still have bricks and mortars. So there's an evolution process on that and the change on how cars will be sold.
I think that's actually very interesting to hear your perception of this, because as we'll get to talking more about in this episode, you are a software executive coming into the space. So I think you are echoing, or not that I think, I know you are echoing the sentiment of a lot of the transportation technologists out there, the mobility technologists out there. So you definitely are echoing that same type of sentiment. Steve, on your hand, you have come from the dealer world by virtue of an auto group. I'm curious to know your thoughts on what Anthony has said here.
Yeah, so I think that market plays a huge role in that, right? So when we look at some of the stores that we have conversation with, and we see how starkly different that is in their levels of adaptation to it, right? Versus our groups, which was in the Midwest, right? So we had Indiana, we had Iowa, we had Michigan. So for those areas, we see a much slower adaption to the digital retailing itself, or pieces in itself. We had some stores that had absolutely no engagement when it come to those tools, the ability to make that vehicle purchase. They still wanted that relationship. They want to know they're going to be taken care of. And it's really the same metrics for some of those stores today as it was 10 years ago. Right. But there's that underlying fear that some of these stores have that customers are going to just tell Alexa to they want to buy a Honda Civic tomorrow, and right? And that car is going to show up, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still, I think it's still early for a lot of those stores. So to Anthony's point, when that's going to happen is a question mark. But I think there's a lot of bigger metros where we're seeing it happen. I mean, Carvana sold, 100,000 cars last year. So there's absolutely takers within that.
And you take a look at some of the OEMs. I mean, I like to look, you know, compare Cadillac, where they're testing in some cities where you buy a service package with Cadillac. So you don't buy a car, you buy a subscription. Mm-hmm. So you buy a subscription to their car. So, you know, today I want to drive an XT5. Tomorrow I want a sedan. I need something different for the weekend. Swap in the cars, they bring it to me. I'm not buying a car, I'm buying a subscription. So there is, you know, it's no longer if, it's more of a when.
Mm-hmm. And for you too, Anthony, again, not coming from the automotive / dealership world, it's always awesome when you can bring an outsider to come in to look at the problems that everyone has been looking at for decades and come up with the same solution, and then there's a outsider that comes in and sees things from a fresh perspective. Can you tell me, like, what are some of the things that you were seeing?
So, interesting enough, I know I've never worked in a dealership, and I'm always told, and I don't know, Rudy, you must tell me if there's a secret handshake in there, because I believe that there is. When you walk into a dealership, they sniff you out right away and say, you're not from the dealer world, are you?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a secret handshake and some legally binding things that they won't share that with me, but I'm confident that there is.
Sure, I'm sure Steve could concur with that, right? You know, Anthony walks into a dealership, you're like, yeah, this guy did not come from the car business.
Dennis is the one to answer that. He actually has experience in that. I mean, that sounds like something that would be illegal and therefore would not be told to an attorney. So. But Dennis clearly is into illegalities. Is there such a secret handshake?
Cannot say or deny.
Yeah, like, I mean, what good is a secret if I'm sharing it with you?
So that means there is a secret handshake, yeah.
But so the way I see it, I mean, software is a means. It's not the solution. So, and I've spent my entire career in software. And funny enough, I've worked in the automotive industry my entire software career. When I worked at PeopleSoft in the early 90s, I worked on the General Motors account, then I worked on the Toyota account, and then I worked on the Renault account. So I worked on the larger accounts, and then continuously, because I had done some work in the automotive industry and they thought I knew the secret handshake, I always got pegged into that. And when I joined Adobe, I ran the bigger division of the automotive side of the business for Adobe, but always on the OEM side. And then I was fortunate enough to meet a man by the name of Tony Aquila, and I worked for him at Solera. And Tony is a savant in the world of data and automobiles per se. And he bought a company called Autotex, which is a estimating platform in the repair side of the insurance space. And we were there were three in the industry, CCC, Mitchell, and then Autotex, and I ran part of the company for him for many years, which we sold to Vista. And that was really my start into the automotive dealer, because the majority of the dealers that we work with were also owners of body shops. So the integration between the body shop and the dealership was very, very tight. And then the integration between our software and the insurance space was very tight because of how to create claims processing and all that. But then it tied all back into the OEMs, who needed to know what products and parts were available, how much they cost, what you would want to put out there. So you worked on this triangle of working with OEMs, dealers and all that. So I've spent a lot of time on the operational side and how software can enable that. And then my last company that I owned and we spun off was called Vital Insights. And we were the customer experience expertise in the world. And in North America, we ran probably 80% of all of the customer experience surveys for the majority of the OEMs, who pushed it down to the dealers to get that done. And working with the dealers was always an interesting experience for me, because they do look at it from a different perspective. They're much more entrepreneurial than you see a lot of the executives that I was so accustomed to working mm-hmm. with. That changes the dynamics quite a bit. So for me, coming to work where people have told me, you know, the day you pay my mortgage, or the day you pay my salaries, or the day you pay the lights that go on and off here, is the day you tell me what to do, was an eye-opening experience, to tell you the truth.
You're like, is there an automation to this? Can I just want to use some kind of software to fix what you're telling me is a problem.
Absolutely. And that's, and you know, and they all want to really look at the white of the eyes of the people that are working with them. And I respect that a lot. And, you know, Rudy and I were talking about, you know, just a little bit at the beginning about the industry itself. And it's an industry where I find that it's it's refreshing because it's not all lawyer. It's not all contracts. And mean that with all due respect.
No, no, no. Yeah, it's not all soulless, I think, is what you, black and white. What you said, which was really interesting to me, is you can really rely upon a handshake still. I just find that's amazing to me in this day and age with litigation and people, you know, not trusting each other, and even the age of the internet and bad reviews and everything, that somebody's word is still something that people will execute a contract on. I mean, that's amazing. It sounds like why? Surreal. Why is that? But what is it about it? I want to know the why.
I find it's a lot more, I mean, and Steve can probably speak a lot more into than that than I can, but it all comes down to a lot of these organizations that I've worked with and that we're working with, like the Penske Group. Take, for example, Roger Penske, a man that grew up, you know, as a car novice, a race car driver, with strong foundations and importance around the team, the people they work with, and that loyalty and that trust, that a handshake was enough. Or you know, Scott Fader, a man I loved tremendously, the CEO for the Mile One Group out of Baltimore. Scott will look at you and says, you know, my father built this business, and you know, when he built it, he would look at the guys and says, we're going to work together on this, we'll shake hands, and that was good enough, and that was an honor system. And it trickled all the way down to the, you know, the ones that are running it today. Even the professional businesses like the Penske's still have that in them. It's part of the DNA, I find.
Do you see what my problem is with this entire thing? If there
human
are
human interaction,
well, there's that. if people are still executing on a handshake and they're not letting people down, how are we lawyers supposed to sue anybody? Do you not see why I have such a problem with this? Well, it all comes down to my mortgage and my bottom line.
Well, that segues really well. And that's why they always ask me, you know, can I use your system to track any of the conversations we had in case we have litigation against us? You know, that's a topic of conversation I find really interesting that happens.
Wait, but how often does that happen, though?
Often.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yes, there is.
I mean, I could see that actually happening often. Yes. I mean,
A deal's closed and someone will say, well, you said this, and they said, no, we didn't. And they'll call us up and says, can we get the recording from 2007 for this? And we keep them all. So we hold on and we store all of the conversations on behalf of our customers in a lockbox environment. And at any point in time they want it, they can come and get it.
So, you know, Anthony, taking over the helm of Call Review, in which, remind me, you've been at the helm for
so November 14th was the actual first day on the job. I stepped into the office on November 14th and worked with Chip very closely on that.
Okay, so, and I want to actually get to eventually your relationship with Chip, because you guys kind of almost remind me of a great duo, of the great duos of this world. You know, Kobe, Shaq, Rudy, Dennis.
I was thinking more Abbott and Costello, but yeah,
not there. We can do that too. But so you're serving at the helm of a company that has already amassed millions of calls and data points. So I'm curious, as you're in this current position, how did you start to look to dissect things at Call Review to say, okay, hey, these are some of the problem areas, and this is where we can start to do better?
Great point. And we'll touch on the Chip story after, right? You don't want me to?
Yes.
Okay. So let me first say, Call Review is one of the most fascinating and impressive organizations that I've ever had the opportunity to take over on the helm. A couple things. One, it's focused on customer experience is by far the best I've ever seen. And I've worked with some really great organizations and learned really well from my mentor and great friend, Dave Duffield.
How would you define customer experience?
Well, it's all about how do we make you successful. So the end result is how successful do we make the customer, and it's not just about providing a piece of software to make you successful. It's about how do you make that software really work for them to be successful. Again, I've said in the beginning, the software is a means; it's not a ways. But our team is there to help you take that means to make it into a way that you can be very successful. We have proof. And full proof and audited proof that we increase sales. Forget about increased productivity, forget increase about appointment settings. Those are all good things and metrics. We increase sales at the end of the day.
And you're this is done by you're tracking the calls, you're recording the discussions, triggering some keywords that would then be essentially passed on to the dealership sales staff to then monetize on that transaction.
So I'll break it down to three simple things. I love for Steve to chime in because he'll tell you more technically on a lot of stuff we do there. We do three things really well, really, really well. And I think we're the best in the industry on the first, which is determining connected calls. So connecting is the most important aspect you got to do. I just came back from an interview with a CEO of a large automotive organization here in the United States. And he said that 39% of the calls, 39%, I want to reiterate that, 39% of the calls are answered in a dealership, which means 61% of the calls get lost. Uh-huh. That's called connectivity. So that ability to capture and know that when to a human to be addressed, uh-huh. we are the only one in the industries that measure it, understand it, and can tell you. So think of it, because it's so important. If I can just correct that piece of the business.
61% of the business.
Uh-huh. And I can increase that by 50%. Uh-huh. So I'm gonna give you 30% more uh-huh. ability to answer a call. And you can convert those by 50%. Uh-huh. So I get now a number that's calling out there. So this gentleman, this CEO said to me, at the end of the day, if we do what we're supposed to do right with your software, we will get 5 more sales a month, equaling $110,000 in profits that they were talking about in service and sales altogether. So connectivity is a real big piece of it. And call review under CHIP's guidance and the importance that we put on creating success for our customers is predominant. So that's the first piece. The second piece is all around what I call the communication intelligence. We don't only stop at voice because we're listening to a number of other things. Voice is really important. That's where we started. So the tracking of the voice, the conversion of the voice. Now, I don't know if you read the two most recent articles on Facebook and Microsoft and their audio recording capabilities.
I have heard a little bit about this, I think they are recording it, right?
They are recording it, but now they're providing services to provide recording, but they've noticed that you have to provide it and update it with human capabilities because there is no automated, and that's just, so it's out today. It's a real interesting article that I was reading, and Facebook is providing human complemented AI audio recording, transcribing, which is really amazing. And that's what we've always done, because call review for a number of years has invested in AI extensively, and we've been really working on it. Now, my background is software, as you mentioned in the beginning, and I know that piece, especially when it comes to data, really well. There is no AI tool that can convert data correctly at 100%. It's impossible. Sure. Humans don't even do it to begin with. But then trying to do it in the automotive business, where the nomenclature is so different. There's categorizations and categories that are so unique. A wheel, a tire, a spoke has different definitions, and an AI tool that's not properly trained will never be able to determine it. We have a customer, I was listening on a call the other day, who happened to be from England, and he said, "I have a problem with my boot." And the guy on the service side said, "Excuse me, I've got a problem with my boot.
Why are you calling a dealership? Call a shoe guy."
And as you know, what is a boot in England? It's the trunk of a car.
Right.
So, and our system picked it up. We said it was trunk. We divide because we do that. And so being a specialist in our domain is really important. We don't do hotels. We don't do restaurants. We don't do hospitals. We don't do call center. We are 100% automotive, and that's my direction. Mm-hmm. So we are specific, and we're going to be the best at it.
Steve, so to you, you came from the auto group world, and working now at Call Review and hearing a lot of the things that Anthony's talking about, how are you understanding the implications now of call data and how it can improve a dealership?
Yeah, so my first awareness of it really was running the group itself, right? So we had several auto groups in the last team that I was overseeing, and one of the groups said, "Hey, you know, we had this product offering that was shown to us. We want you to take a close look at it, see if it's something that's viable for this group and maybe for the organization." So when we had the conversation with them, their first thing to us was, our average dealer for Call Review is seeing that 38% of the calls are not connecting. Like, there's no way. Look, we have human beings that are answering those phone calls and are providing those transfers to the correct department. There is no way that we're at 38%. That's an inflated number. It's impossible. Right. So they said, "Well, they're offering us the tool for free to test drive it out and to see what our metrics are so we can figure out what challenges that we may or may not have with that." So at that platform GM's discretion, we said, "All right, we're going to try it out." We found out that 38% wasn't correct. It was much higher. And what we're finding out is that we had several extensions that were set up that were going to an IVR loop. So they kept going back to press one for sales. They press one for sales, and they come back, press one for sales, right? Mm-hmm. And the customer was getting disenchanted with it, and they were hanging up. So we had no idea how to identify how many customers we were actually losing other than to the call review reporting, because those that data points never hit our other systems. In addition to that, we had customers that were calling in at peak times and there was nobody available to answer those phone calls, or they were getting blindly transferred back to the service department who is focused on that customer that is standing in front of them, that they can't handle that call. So they ignore that call and that customer isn't calling back. They want the service now. And what was most interesting was we did this report for 60 days and we took the first 30 days of that data and looked at through our CRM and our DMS data to see what the incursion or recurrence was by name, by phone number, by any data points that we could. And we found out that over half of those customers were lost. We never had a conversation with them in any way that we could find or measure. That opened the door to say, all right, we need to look at this further. Right? That's a huge, huge loss. So now being with Call Review and talking with dealers and seeing those same results and looking at that intro numbers versus their 30-day numbers and seeing that 60-day numbers and how that data transforms in time just because of an awareness to it. Right, and that's one small piece of what the tool does, but it's so impactful because they're throwing away. For us, we were throwing away over 42% of our total business because nobody was answering the phone.
Well, Anthony, on your end, is there something that, as you've looked at the data here, that you've seen the data of the call of call tracking, call monitoring, and something has surprised you in terms of? Again, maybe not the missed opportunity of the 61%, but is there something else that you're looking at and you're saying, hey, you know what, we can probably develop a new model out of this new data to apply a new, you know, potentially new opportunity to?
Absolutely. But it comes down to the question, why are these calls not
Fair.
Being handled properly?
Sure. Okay.
So the one thing that's impressive about this industry, which I admire very much, and the challenges that go with it, is the volatility of the changes that go on. I hear anywhere from 70 to 80% turnover in your sales staff on an annual basis. And I don't know any business that can survive
right.
that. Exactly,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, it's the salespeople. We're not talking about the
sure.
general managers.
Sure,
we're
sure.
not, but it's still the-
But,
the,
but those, are the front, those are the frontline people.
Absolutely.
Those are dealing with customers.
Absolutely. So how do you help them? And you know, call tracking, call monitoring services or solutions that I've seen have got a bad rap in the industry because a lot of people take it as a carrot and stick. You didn't do this, you didn't do that. While I turn around and say, this is more like a, you know, an athlete's training guide. If you want to be top salesman and you want to be really good at it, you want to know what you're doing wrong. I bet, you know, I know I used to record myself before a presentation to see what I was doing so I can improve and all that. That's what it does. So what we're finding from the data side, and especially what we do and the kind of focus that we have because we are automotive centric, we're looking at key attributes or components of what needs to be done and measured to improve. So the big things are, how do I find what's going to make you better as a salesperson?
So there's really two fronts you're addressing here. One is on the external side of logging customer calls to improve the customer experience on that end, and then the other side is on the internal side of improving sales operations and management, essentially, of the sales and service staff.
Absolutely. The data itself, I mean, when you do receive it and using the technology as I see it right now, I'd like to say that we're able to predict certain things. So we today are able to measure what we call sentiment, but also emotion.
And how do you measure, how do you gauge that?
So there's a couple ways to do it. So theoretically, you can actually use it by the words that you're using. So you combine words together, and there's a system that allows you to be able to determine what the sentiment. Are you happy or disappointed and whatnot? And then by combining a couple more of those elements, you can actually obtain the emotion of the person by associating them together in phrases and coming out with the algorithm. So we do that. But when you get them on the phone, it's easy to do it on paper, but you know, you can play around with paper, but when you have them on the phone, and that's the best, because the guy on the phone, his emotion will come out. So tonality will be a big play. The person's expressions and the elevations of the voice will play into that. So we capture all of that in our algorithms.
Are you capturing like decibel levels then? Or
yes,
like,
we are.
Really?
Correct. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Pitch over pitch change.
Wow. That's actually pretty impressive.
Oh, it really is. So
and yeah. Oh, go ahead.
So when you're capturing that, now I'm able to, and we're able then to, I mean, we're not there yet, but this is the next phase where we're going, coach the guy and tell him, start using these words to calm them down. Start using these to help, you know, through the situation. So you're coaching that person through a situation, and it helps. So those are the kind of things that technology itself can really be of assistance, because you can't have the personal coach with you all the time, but you can have the Fitbit on your wrist telling you've walked enough steps, or the call review system telling you, hey, you need to do this right now.
So that, I love that. That's definitely news to me. I mean, Rudy, understanding the fact that you have technology that can track the pitches in your voice, I mean, you will be a 10 times better stand-up comic. Knowing intonation.
Yeah, I'm thinking about all kinds of applicability of this program, but I will say, on the phone, I can be pretty tough. I'm a tough customer on the phone, like face to face. There's that difference when it's face to face and I'm
more
looking
empathy.
Into something. Way more empathy. There's a human being there, and I also feel when I'm talking face to face to somebody that they're giving me all their attention, they're, you know, feeling my frustration. So it's like a tone level down.
Correct.
When I'm on the phone, I feel like I can't get my message across. I can't get my frustration across unless I raise my voice, and I have a very powerful voice and I know how to use it. And I know sometimes, and I apologize to the world of customer service representatives or anybody I've ever spoken
and
to
listeners,
on the phone.
Damn it.
I hereby apologize, and I forever apologize, because I can be very, very tough. So with this software, you can help with the very, very
Absolutely.
Tough customer.
They can help you, Mr. High Maintenance, Rudy Solo, have a better experience.
And in addition to that, when
everybody
one of those
should buy this. Anybody who owns has a phone should buy this, I'm telling you.
What's Sorry. Additional to that as well is that if that conversation occurs, right, which we hope it never does, but when that conversation does arrive, then not only are we able to detect that, but we're also sending an alert to the management team that call just occurred. So that way, and we're talking about minutes, not hours, days, or I've got to go back through this archive, click on the see a play buttons to figure out which calls were good or bad, right? I get an alert as a manager, as a text message or an email, however I prefer, that gives me that information, gives me why I'm getting that alert, gives me ability to listen to the call right then and see a quick summary. So I don't have to listen to a 6-minute call, right, of Rudy reaching out and beating up on one of my sales guys. I can see in a quick couple sentences what happened on this call. But most importantly, I can correct that situation in the moment after you had a chance to calm down, call you back, and then make that situation right. So it doesn't become a CSI issue. It's not a chase, right? Or start having these Google reviews or Yelp reviews I have to try to unwind after the fact. Mm. I can deal with the situation while it's in the moment. And that saves deals.
Are you guys familiar with CSI, by the way? Do you know what that means?
Yes.
Okay.
Customer Servicing Index.
And from the OEM perspective, that's massive.
Right.
I don't want everybody to think I'm like this brute.
We've already blocked your calls, so your number's been blocked on my phone.
But yeah, okay, fine. I'm a high maintenance customer because I'm an attorney, and I feel like I provide the utmost value to my clients, and I go all in for them, and I try to give them the best service humanly possible. And my problem is the way I set my expectations for
yes.
me, which are lofty and kind of crazy for everything that I do, I expect the rest of the world to be the same way. That's my fault. I know it's my fault.
But Ruby, go further, because I'm with you on this one here, but think about it. What is the perception of a dealer? When you're about to call, and that's, I mean, and I hate to say it, you know, sometimes they have this negative perception, and it's still the guy with the white cowboy hat and white cowboy boots mm-hmm. yelling in the parking lot, come and see me and all that, and you feel you've been slimed and all, which is way not the case anymore. But that's how it starts. So think about it. You're going to call, I mean, today, 90%, if not more, people are calling a dealership, not because they want you to give them information on specifics. They've already done their research. They already know what the car they want. They already know what kind of color. They already know what the trim is. They even know what they're going to pay for it, whatnot. They're going to call you because two things, and only two things. One, for some specific information, and usually because they want to know if you have that vehicle on the lot.
That's right.
So that's the first one.
Definitely
And
true.
The second one, which I found it to be mostly interesting, is do I want to come and do business with you? Because I know I have a choice. You might be the closest dealer to my house, and you might be the dealership I want to work with. But do I really want to work with you? And I'm going to determine that on the phone.
That's the sentiment part you're talking
yes.
about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that becomes so important, Dennis, because you know that ability to determine, because that guy can go shopping anywhere. And it's amazing how far consumers will go today to buy a car versus the days when my dad bought his car. Mm-hmm. You know, we bought it for convenience. We got it was close by because I knew I was going to get it serviced there and all that. This day and age, that does not matter anymore. I know people, we have customers that will buy cars in Miami and have them shipped to New Jersey.
Yep, right.
Because that relationship is so good,
right?
Yep. You know, so that becomes real important.
Well, so last question here for you, Anthony. Sure. Again, please let's talk about actually now your relationship with Chip. How did this duo come together? How did this power couple come together?
So it's amazing. When I first got interviewed for the position as CEO of Call Review, I met Chip, and I must say, if for anybody who's not met Chip, you've got to meet him because he is a legend and a lovable guy. He really is, and one of the smartest car guys you'll ever meet, really, but a car guy 100%. And he came from the retail business,
yep.
Owned dealerships, ran dealerships, knows dealerships, built this company. I mean, the story about how he built it, we'll get to it another time, is a fantastic story, well worth this to tell all the time, but built it based on what a car dealership would need.
Exactly.
So yep. So I tell people this Call Review is a company built by car people, for car people, with car people.
With a software executive running it.
Today you've put, so because now we've gotten to the point where we're as big as we are, we need to put in some structure and some ability to scale it and take it to the next level.
Sorry, how many employees? I'm sorry.
We're about 85 employees and growing. I mean, I've just hired another 7, so we'll be, what does that do? That will be 91 at the end of the month.
Do you need to hire a voice person to berate or beat up anybody? Because I do voice stuff on the side. I'm happy to lend you the power of Rudy's
house. We're
gonna have to talk about that.
You need to sign a waiver for that, actually.
So when I met Chip and I was introduced to Chip, for me, it was really, can I work with someone of that stature and someone who actually founded and built this company? Because it's not just a company, it is Chip. Call Review has Chip DNA in it all the way. Mm. I admire the man to be able to say, I've taken it to where I can. I can't go any further. My skills aren't what they are. And as you can see around us, the competition is growing. They're all professionalizing themselves and all that. And we need that help. But I don't want the culture to be destroyed. Can you adapt to that culture, Anthony Genucovo? I said yes. I demonstrated I could. And Chip is on the board. Chip is still an owner of the company. Mm-hmm. So Chip and I speak, God, I think more often than people would like to know, but he does call a lot, and he'll call me because he'll say, hey, the phone lines aren't right, or this is not right, but I work really close, take his advice very, very well, and Chip has been exceptional as a leader, as a friend, and as an owner of the company to let me run it in a way that needs to be run to take us to the next level.
Well, good for you. And I love the fact that some of the new data points that you guys are measuring. It sounds like this is a new data point in the industry, when you take a lot of these existing data points of just time on a call and IP address and location, and you start to combine it with other things, and now you're measuring sentiment. I think this is the innovation that a lot of these call tracking companies need to have. So that's great that you're bringing it to the table. Anthony, how can people follow you?
It's a good question. I'm not much of a social media guy. I'm gonna have to talk to my new lawyer here, Ruby, to find out how we can properly do this. I am on LinkedIn, Call Review.
Okay.
Anthony Genucovo at callreview.com.
Go ahead and try to spell that.
That's right.
Try to spell that. That's not a four-letter one like Rudy. I can't even spell that. Even if you hand me your card, I still wouldn't be able to spell it.
And that's the objective of trying to root out the guys that do want to call me or not call me.
Yeah, perfect.
But I am really accessible. My team is, we've got a Call Review website. Please come to that. There's a Twitter account that's Call Review.
And listeners, I'll put the contact information on the episode page. Steve, how can people follow you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn a lot, so... LinkedIn.com/Stephen Lorries.
Stephen Lorries. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Wisco Weekly. As we end every episode, on behalf of Kelly, Rudy, and myself, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tutsin, gambe, yamas, nastarovie, to the customer experience. Take the things and leave them out on the street because you ain't gonna need it. Let's revisit Tanya from Eugene, Oregon, and her car buying story. Tanya found the bespoke car of her dreams, an Audi S8, and it was located in Mission Viejo, California.
Without hesitation, she wanted the car at whatever price. However, she did not want to pay California sales tax. This car buying scenario is one that doesn't happen often. However, when it does, there is a very stringent process to follow. Because California has been at this rodeo before, the Board of Equalization, the public agency in charge of collecting taxes and fees, has very strict requirements on how to avoid paying local sales tax. One of the common requests from buyers is to simply pick up the car at the automotive retailer and drive it straight home. You can imagine all the scenarios where the buyer games this system, which is why this is not a valid or legal way to avoid paying California sales tax. So how did we advise Tanya? As long as the buyer does not take delivery of the vehicle within the California borders, then there is a legal way to not pay sales tax. So, we shipped the car to Eugene for significantly less than 8% of $100,000. While shipping the car to a buyer out of state allows the buyer to legally avoid paying sales tax, it is incumbent on the buyer to visit their local DMV to be compliant with local and state law. As a disclaimer, please be sure to talk to your local DMV about tax and fees relevant to your situation. So the next time you see that bespoke car in California and you want to avoid paying California sales tax, just be sure that you are registering the car out of state and that you do not take delivery of the car within the California borders. You're welcome. Thanks for tuning into this episode. We'll be back next week.